Hello, everyone, and welcome to JeffG tonight. Sorry for the late start. I don't know what's happening with the air, but the air is dry, and so I'm chugging Gatorade Zero all day, and yet I'm still feeling thirsty. I don't know why. There should not be better thirst quenching than Gatorade Zero. I don't know. Maybe some of you are water people. You would tell me to drink water instead, but it's supposed to be even better than water with the electrolytes. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Real Based Talk says, did you eat a lot of garlic? No, I don't think so. No. My God. Attack of the insects. Okay, let's get started. It was this cute insect, you know, the ladybug. It was a ladybug that was coming to drink my Gatorade Zero. Sydney Sweeney is trending. I love how we are supposed to all act like this is a person talking to us and we're listening to her words while her round boobs are sexually assaulting my eyes. Sydney Sweeney is trending, and it's clear that it's because of her boobs being shown at the center of the screen of SNL.
Thank you, everyone, for tonight. This has been such an amazing week. Thank you, Lord. Thank you to the amazing
fans. Look at our, all of our allies. Diversity is there behind her, but we all know that this screen is trending because of a hot, typically hot, blonde female with boobs. Typical beauty cannot be fought against. The white woman wins again. There she is leading a handicapped man, a lesbian, a black woman. We all know what is beautiful. Even the leftists do. She even does the bouncing. Oh my God. Things don't change. This is why I said there is no, Andrew Wilson was predicting that there would be a ETOT apocalypse, that somehow the sexual signal would not work anymore. Society would revert against it. It's like, no, it always goes back to boobs, and boobs will always work. I predict that Andrew Wilson's ETOT apocalypse will not happen. I did predict an ETOT apocalypse of my own, which is that AI girls will compete with the actual ETOTs. But I think that you cannot change the fact that humanity always converges toward having boobs at the center of the screen. It's just, I've been studying monkeys. It's the same thing, except that the monkeys don't care so much about boobs. They care mostly about ass. But there's no escaping this. Saturn Shine says she's probably very liberal. Yeah, in case you need a cold shower to turn you off a little bit, here's another picture of Sydney Sweeney. Oh, God. Oh, shit. I mean, she could be rated pretty high in some weird tribe of elongated neck kind of community. What the fuck? This is the same woman we have seen on SNL. Her boobs, not necessarily my type of boobs, although I can check it and I can know that objectively those are the perfect boobs. I know that the standards of beauty, AI is trying to give you a slightly bigger boobs than this. When you ask AI to design boobs, they make it a little bigger. I find this totally abusive, what AI does. Those boobs are, I know, the objectively sized boob for the big boob lovers. Personally, I think that a female is more beautiful overall when you look at her as a whole. A female is more beautiful with slightly smaller boobs than this. In fact, much smaller boobs. John Drake says, the 30 earrings I can do without. Yes, Real Based Talk says she looks okay except for the piercings. Yes, the piercings come as a red flag. Plan B, Bitcoin is looking strong. RSI 73. Wow, man. It's so exciting to be well positioned for this Bitcoin bull run. I'm just sitting back and enjoying all of it. I used to be frustrated at Bitcoin bull runs, either because I didn't get in quite fast enough and I would have wanted the price to dip, and sometimes I was shorting, trying to get some bonus Bitcoin by shorting. But no, this bull run, I'm taking it in whole. I've appreciated the first few dollars above 16K. At 17K, I was happy. At 23K, I was happy. At 27K, I was happy. 29K. I've enjoyed every single increase because even my change money, I've put it on longs. It's I bought Bitcoin with everything I had. And then when I had these small wallets with $100 here, $200 here, I invested this on leverage long 100x. Boom! I can take any drop. You go ahead. I'm betting this money that this will go up. RSI equals relative strength index. Yeah, and you know, I was disappointed by the last bull run because you can see the bull runs have been de-amplifying in RSI. Slightly lower in 2013, slightly lower in 2017. So in 2021, I was I had drunk the Bitcoin Kool-Aid. I was like, we're going to get to 100K. We're going to get above this. Now, we had a slightly disappointing bull run. Not something dramatic, but for someone, like, I was dreaming, I want to be able to have invested $1,000 in Bitcoin and be able to buy an island at the end. I want to buy an island. And it didn't quite give us this in 2021 because the RSI kept de-amplifying. But I'm looking at this bull run. If there's a bull run that can compete with these RSI and go above the de-amplified RSI, which would be predicted to be approximately here, if Bitcoin can rise and, you know, rise this bull run stronger than ETH, stronger than anything, and be confirmed as the only strong reserve cryptocurrency, the rest is all games, the rest is all... Sure, it exists, but it's secondary. If we can get this, if we can get a piercing of this line here between these green dots and the disappointing result of the 2021 bull run, if we can get above this line here, 85, 87 RSI, it's going to get crazy. And then the only problem you're going to have is, when do I sell? Do I sell at 100K? Do I sell at 200K? Do I sell at $500,000? Those are the problems you're going to have. And if you look at the early activity, it is the craziest start of a bull run ever. Because look, this is Plan B. Plan B always writes the blue points are before the halving, and the red points are after the halving. So here, after the halving, red point, you have the massive rise. Two-shot bull run with light in the orange, some activity. Here in 2016, slight excitement with the blue, but the real up starts with the red. So after the halving, two components of rise, one dip at the middle of the bull run, and then back up. In 2021, we had not much excitement before the halving. There was the whole COVID crash here. Maybe it was here, I don't know, maybe here. But then halving gets in, poof, you have the excitement post-halving. Here we have a total excitement of the Bitcoin market in the blue. We are still pre-halving. The halving hasn't even had its effect. People are already fighting for it. Now, it can mean two things. It can mean we're headed toward red in the top and peak and repeak and we may be headed towards super highs. Or we have a similar intensity of bull run, but it's been moved in advance because people are more and more expecting the bull run. So people have gotten wise to the bull run around the halving. And it may be that this time it's disappointing around the halving and it's the gains are made before the halving. I don't know what it will be, but I know that we will be faced with the decision. Do we sell when the first two red points show up? Like the first two red points will be around here. Do we sell here or do we dream of buying an island, starting a parallel community, keeping your Bitcoin? I think it's going to boil down to, I might sell a part, I might keep a part, I don't know. Pepe, meanwhile, you remember I went balls deep into Pepe token? Pepe has done 4x in the last few days. I wasn't even following it anymore. I bought these Pepe tokens thinking I want to be part of a Mimetic Rise, Mimetic token for the next bull run. I know that if I buy in advance, I'm going to get the best price. It's been 4x since I bought it, and Pepe is going to we don't know what levels. Lendald Guntram says, and BTC is not dominating in the Google searches yet. In the past, it did, so a massive wave may be ahead of us. Yeah, typically, I'll tell you what, there's something around the Christmas period where there is social contagion of BTC. There is not much social contagion going on in spring and summer. So if I expect a social contagion, it would be around November, December. It's the families. It's the people training their uncle to buy BTC. So right now is not even a social phenomenon. Right now, the price is getting up just because all the institutions are getting in. It's all institutional. This is perfect. This is perfect. Because I want another layer. I want the uncle, the boomers to get in. And some of them will get through ETF. Some of them will get through just personal buying. But we haven't. Normally, a Bitcoin bull run was activated by the uncle boomers getting trained at Bitcoin. This time, it's totally different. Speaker's Corner says, we're pumping right now. Absolutely. We're still going up. 63.4K. My God, it feels good. God Candle incoming. President Nayib Bukele, orange-pilled the emir. So there are rumors that some of these Qatar executives and El Salvador people, governments, big sellers of oil and stuff, that they're about to get into Bitcoin. And if they do, prepare for a massive rise. Simeon says, did we cover Shiba today yet? I made a 115,000 trade 2 days ago. Massive. Shiba, I've never went into it. Shiba Inu coin. Let me check the price. It's honestly... I'm super happy if you guys get into these Mimetic tokens and are getting lucky with it. Yeah, I mean, Shiba is exploding in value. Honestly, it's like you're going to judge me. And you guys are money makers on the regular chat. You don't care about this. But I'm an emotional guy. Shiba sounds Indian to me. And I have enormous reservations to buy something that sounds Indian. It sounds Mexican. It sounds like you guys with the Shiba Inu coin are the kind of guys who would throw cow shit to each other in a festival. Like that is how dirty it sounds to me. Shiba Inu. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, and then Simeon says, no, JF, it's named after the Shiba Inu dog. Your dog race has a terrible name, terrible PR, okay? And I'm not ever going to buy Shiba because of this. seriously, like, you guys sound like Indian scammers. You chose a name that could be Indian. It sounds like you're Indian deities or something. And Simeon says it's a Japanese bread. Well, see, I didn't know, but I'm still going to live in my parallel world in which I'm disgusted by your token. I'm not buying Shiba Inu ever. Barnaby Buto says it's Japanese, lol. Oh, you know, you have to win some and then lose some. I have accepted that there was money to be made with Shiba, but that I would never make that money. And sometimes you have to say no. You have to specialize in something. I specialize in making money with Bitcoin. Pepe Coin is my only, like, risky bet, and I have some little X and some little ETH, but I believe mostly in Bitcoin, and Shiba is a disgusting name to me. It sounds like you're about to show me a seven-handed deity or something. The founder of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, created a new Bitcoin wallet called the BitKey. Let's have a look at the ad here.
If you're someone who wants to protect your Bitcoin.
So it's a kind of hexagon. It's an hexagon that contains your seed keys. You enable your phone by approaching it to the phone and kind of detecting it. I suppose there is some sort of password. And I believe that it integrates the full conception of multi-sig. It's not that much of an advance. If anything, I kind of don't like these functionalities. I don't like the idea of Wi-Fi connection. Even if I understand that whatever will be passed between the device and the phone is probably a signed message and the seed keys are staying in the device, I'm sure they've taken all appropriate security measures. But to me, there is still something with the ledger connecting it physically. In my mind, it's better. It feels better. It feels like, oh, if I disconnect it, there is zero way to access my device. It may be an irrational thought, but I think that long term, I may be proven right. You never know if there will be an hack that kind of fakes your phone communication with this and kind of extract the information from the seed key enough to make you commit to false transactions. I really like the idea of wired connection, the privacy of it. So basically, this device does not offer much advance other than promising a multi-sig support. That is good. We need to get into multi-sig. We need to get into multi-sig being easy to do with these devices. It's not yet easy. You have to pass through hoops to get it done. And then the Wi-Fi connectivity, I think it's a disadvantage. But there's also a ledger. The ledger stacks. The ledger stacks is a device that allows you to get this kind of Wi-Fi communication with the laptop, and then you do your operation.
And who wants to use it wherever you go? So you can send and receive anytime, any place, anywhere in the world. And know that when you lose something, because life happens, BitKey's recovery tools have you covered, just like magic. For security and peace of mind, choose BitKey.
Yeah, not so different from Ledger. Seems like a sexy product that will be marketed a lot, that is associated with Jack Dorsey, but not enough for me to move from Ledger to this. DK Shadow says, Ledger, what the fuck? Give me my stacks. Did you order the stacks? I don't even know if it's out. You would have to keep me up to date, because I know it was available for order, but I don't know if they deliver yet. I looked at the stacks. It's not super interesting. It's just luxury. integrated to the ledger. If you want that luxury, if you want, I pre-ordered it like an idiot. There you go. Well, you know, I looked at the feature of the device. It's really just luxury. It's like, oh, a bigger screen, and oh, you can touch screen, and oh, you can Bluetooth enable. All of this I don't want, because to me, what I buy, when I buy a ledger, I buy the primary wire functioning thing, the basic thing that is a physical device that will generate my seed key. That's the only thing I buy when I buy a ledger, by the way, because you could generate your seed keys on a piece of paper. My problem with this is the moment I insert these seed keys into a software, I could be listened to, I could be wiretapped. There could be a keyboard logger virus on my computer. This is what the ledger solves to me. It's a device that is outside the computer that generates the seed keys. That's all I want. And to put some fluff around it like they did with the stacks is not so interesting to me. BlackRock's iShares Bitcoin Trust has accumulated $10 billion in just 7 weeks, the fastest an ETF has ever hit that milestone, and a feat which the first gold ETF took more than 2 years to accomplish. The Bitcoin ETF is a radically different product from any other ETFs that have ever existed. The speed is something else. What happened here is there's kind of an interface that is born between the financial system and the virtual world. Michael Saylor was explaining things along those lines. And this interface is unlimited. There's no limit as to how these companies will eventually perceive their own interest to preserve wealth into just throwing it out into Bitcoin, just like MicroStrategy is doing. And I was reading past information about Michael Saylor. There was a video of him giving an interview when he was 23 or something. And oh my God, do I have respect for this guy. Because in the 80s, you have VHS recorded video of him. And he was explaining that what his passion was to make Excel sheets. And he wanted to come to companies and say, look, tell me everything that relates to a decision you make. I will fit them into my program. He was making a kind of AI for decision making for companies. So should I buy 200 packs of burger now, or should I wait tomorrow? Should I order a van of McDonald's, custom delivery material for my franchise of McDo, or should I wait next week? This kind of decision is what Michael Saylor was interested in from the beginning. I knew this because I knew about his past in programming. And it's basically, he was making these super complex Excel sheets that will tell you, well, should you buy it now or should you buy it tomorrow? Or should you make that delivery of your burgers now? Or do you have enough burgers to satisfy your current customers? What are the cost of the burgers today? What are they in 2 days from now? What if you package with another delivery? You would insert all of these equations into an Excel sheet, and it would give the response to corporations. Here's the best path to lose less money. And he was explaining in this interview of the 80s or something. I don't know the exact date, but he was something like 23 years old. And he was explaining that most Excel sheets he was programming were disappointing to his customers, to his corporation that were consulting him, because his answer that he was always finding is, you should stop doing business. He says, my AI was always telling them, you have to stop doing business. You're leaking money. You're losing money trying to sell burgers to people. And this guy was saying this before Bitcoin was invented, before he had any interest in Bitcoin. There he was saying, hey, you're losing money selling burgers. In fact, you would be doing much better if you faked selling burgers, but just acquired the restaurants, because here's where you make your money. Like, you know, like the McDo movie, you're making your money out of the real estate. The whole burger thing is a scam. The burger is just to make the case that your place is sustainable as a restaurant. And that's where your commercial real estate gains value. It's because you're showing to other people that in this building, you can attract enough customer to sustain a McDo. So now you're not selling burgers. You're a real estate investor. But you're decorating your real estate with employees and burgers. But Michael Saylor was calling the bullshit of this system 40 years ago. And he was telling these people, my calculations are that you should stop doing everything you're doing. You should put your money here in a high interest rate, the highest interest rate you can find. You're going to lose less of it, but everything that you're doing is useless. You are losing money doing burgers. And the companies would say, well, we can't do this. Our selling point to our shareholders is that we're selling burgers. We're making them believe that they're going to eventually make money out of us selling burgers. Michael Saylor had detected a bug in our economic system and no one wanted to listen to him. And Michael Saylor just stuck to his vision for decades, keeping it in mind. And eventually Bitcoin shows up and he sees that this is where I'm starting to understand his glorious view. He understands now that what he was telling companies to do 20 years ago, he can now force them to do it with Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is this other option. You don't have to fake selling burgers today. If you can't beat the returns of Bitcoin, you are not growing. So who can beat the returns of Bitcoin selling burgers? No one. No one can. This is what I've come to understand. Nothing of what I could be writing books. I could be an author writing books for you guys. And I hope I will. I hope I will keep writing my book. But writing books is not a way to make money. Working is not a way to make money. And you're not going to make money by selling burgers with the taxation of the state above you, forcing you to pay your employees that much. You are squeezed. Michael Saylor eventually saw Bitcoin and understood Bitcoin is solving the problem that I couldn't solve by trying to convince these people. And that's why we have the modern discourse of Michael Saylor and Bitcoin, which is, if money was finite, you wouldn't be running after your tails, trying to make more USD, trying to convert everything that you do in USD into activities. Because you're generating these activities out of a dream. A dream that these activities will one day position you as the center flow for money. Money that keeps losing its value. But if you have a finite supply of money, if you have Bitcoin, you don't need this. You can be as rich in a million years from now than you are today. Time multiplied by whatever adoption Bitcoin gets, plus the gains, plus the lost Bitcoin. There's going to be plenty in there for you to make more money than you would out of selling burgers. And now he can make that case beautifully. DK Shadow says, yep, I've come to the same conclusion as well. You're not going to make it if you can't make money while sleeping. Exactly. And it's shocking. The consequences for our economy of service are devastating. I don't know what the world looks like, DK Shadow, in 10 years from now. The women are going to be fucking insane, because they're gonna get to the shopping. They're going to get to the shopping center with their bags, and there's going to be nothing. We're about to rape this civilization. We're about to totally destroy it. Because what if what happens when the guy that owns the little shopping center where women go to buy their dresses, what happens when this guy understands Bitcoin? What happens when the guy that sells burger understands Bitcoin? What happens when all of them understand Bitcoin? I mean, they're going to stop selling burgers and dresses. And so it's going to be the death of the physical world. And people are going to be pissed. People are going to feel like society is falling. But we're just eliminating what's not worth. We're just cleaning up. It's like we're going to have to maybe explain this to people. Yes, your world is going down, but all of it was bullshit. All of it was bullshit. And the state will be disempowered through this. Because how the state makes money is partly through sales tax. Now, everything will get centralized. People will be less consumers, less consuming less. And the GDP might go down eventually. This might affect the GDP in some major way where, okay, now people are generating less of these expenses and buying moments and taxable moments. And it's going to be beautiful. For someone who likes minimalism, it's really us returning to our natural root, which is this whole world was a lie. You were presented with cartoonish things to buy and to satisfy generated needs, you know, fictitious needs that you didn't have. Barnabé Buteau says, retail stores are sucking so much value out of the system, they won't survive the rise of BTC. This is what's so shocking and scary. That something that I considered was a staple of capitalism will go down. And BTC will just throw it down totally to the ground and knock it out forever. It's so beautiful when you think about it. We can dream. We can dream of a normie squeeze. We can dream of a contraction. But that means depression also. It means economic depression on some time scale that they won't be able to reactivate. Imagine the Fed comes in its classical way, you know, oh, we are in an economic depression. It gets harder and harder for people. They get normie squeezed. The Fed comes in and says, we're going to expand the monetary supply by 10x. Imagine that all this expansion gets into Bitcoin and the world doesn't change. People don't go back to physical stores. People don't start selling burgers anymore. Now, Bitcoin keeps rising in value. People keep disengaging from the system because it's overburdened by bureaucratic nightmares. And everyone has understood that the hope of making money out of a business doesn't work. Man. It's going to happen, I think. I think this is not a wild prediction. It's just what we're experiencing right now. We've already seen the shopping centers closing and the end of the mall era. Mystery Whale has quietly accumulated over $3 billion in Bitcoin in 15 months. A mysterious Bitcoin buyer has quietly amassed billions worth of Bitcoin over the past 2 years, making the unknown address one of the largest single holders of the cryptocurrency, now holding 54,164 Bitcoin. There are crazy stories around this. Some people are bragging to have picked up MicroStrategy at $490. Yeah, the full vision of Michael Saylor is revealing itself to me every day. More in depth. This guy wants to get into the S&P 500, into the automatic money machine, and he wants to drain it. Now they're going to say, okay, you are now a big company, and he's now qualified to fit within the S&P 500. It's a matter of politics whether he gets into it. Now they're going to name him. Now, everyone who buys S&P 500 allocates a part of its money that goes directly into the pocket of Michael Saylor. Now, what does Michael Saylor do? He expands his share supply. He says, we're going to emit new shares. He sells those shares to S&P 500 and other takers. And then he takes this money and he's going to buy Bitcoin with it. Now, his market cap will go up because in his accounting at the end of the year, when Bitcoin goes higher and higher, he's going to say, well, we have that many Bitcoin. Therefore, we're at least worth that much. And the thing is, the S&P 500 distributes money. The ladybug is still there. The S&P 500 distributes money based on market cap. So as long as Michael Saylor keeps expanding share supply, buying Bitcoin with the money, Bitcoin rises in price. Expanding share supplies, buy Bitcoin with the money, Bitcoin rises in price. His accounting always indicates increasing value. Always. Unless you have a big bear market, but then he's in the bear market and he's buying Bitcoin still. So it's like it cannot last forever. At some point, there's a lack of Bitcoin. So Michael Saylor is positioning himself to become bigger and bigger within the S&P 500 through just the rise of price of Bitcoin and the fact that given that there are Bitcoin ETFs, everyone must agree that the market price of Bitcoin is a true value. It's stunning because at some point, MicroStrategy may make better returns than straight holding of Bitcoin through this scheme. I haven't gone through the detailed math. I'm not sure that it's possible, but perhaps he has built the closest machine to being possible to outcompete Bitcoin or to go just a little bit above it. That's amazing. That's amazing. Breaking, Australia's biggest bank, Commonwealth Bank, is limiting monthly Bitcoin purchases. Every bull run, we see this. Every bull run, we see these banks getting nervous because they're seeing the money flow out of themselves and they're seeing that the USD is losing interest and the flows are going into the virtual world and they start blocking it. They make it complicated. And oh, it's like you thought you could buy Bitcoin because you had tried with $100. But now you're doing $1,000 and it's too much and they trigger their security measures. This is a crypto limit to help protect you from fraud and scams. The thing is, by protecting me from fraud and scam, by keeping me from buying Bitcoin right now, you're forcing me to buy it in a month from now. And in a month from now, there's a higher price. So you are part of the fraud and scam. When they do that, they are pissing me off. I want to talk about an excellent Severance, an excellent teleseries. Sub7 was telling me on Discord that he was part of those who recommended it to me. I guess back then I wasn't fully prepared and I didn't check it. But yesterday, someone contacted me on Bitcoin and said, you have to watch this show, Jeff. And this time it did it. I went and watched a handful of episodes from the first season of Severance. It is a spectacular teleseries with some of the top actors. Like, oh my God, every single actor that shows up in this. You kind of recognize their face. It's like I can't name these actors because I'm not an LA guy, you know, tracking Hollywood stars and all. But all of these faces I recognize, and they are extremely good actors, and they're playing in this Kafkaesque bureaucratic world. So it's a mix of a science fiction premise around the theory of mind, and just a social commentary on a Kafkaesque bureaucracy. The mix goes as follows. The science fiction element of this is they have created a workplace where they handle so much critical information that the subjects who are wanting to work, they need to insert a thing in their brain. And that thing will make it so that what they do at work, they only remember at work. What they do outside of work, they only remember it outside of work. So they have been severed. They have had their brain basically split into two personalities. One of them is evolving within the workplace. One of them is existing outside of the workplace. And there is such separation between the two that the person who works only remembers work. So to them, they go into the elevator to leave their workplace, and then the next second, they're in the elevator starting to work again. And same thing for the person outside. As he goes into his work, poof, he forgets everything, but then the next second, he's done with work and he can enjoy his life. So this science fiction premise leads to kind of two persons existing within the same person. And it causes all sorts of ethical issues, but all of them are connected ultimately to normal work. Because I love when science fiction work is so close to reality that it doesn't even matter. Like, this is what everyone does. Everyone is kind of forgetting their life to get to work, and everyone is kind of doing work that they may not be comfortable with, or that they may not fully enjoy, but they're like, I have to do it. I have to sacrifice this part of my brain so that I can have this extra time to enjoy in my life. So in many ways, the science fiction premise is a joke, because you could have this the very same thing happen. You know, it's not necessary. The science fiction premise, and that's the kind of premise I love. When the science fiction just gives it another meta layer, but all of the social commentary belongs to our world. In terms of a Kafkaesque bureaucracy, it's the best illustration I've seen on TV. I think that many attempts have been made. I was looking at the 1984 movie. Many attempts have been made at a dystopian technocracy representation. And they all feel very exaggerated. They feel too much. This is just right there. This is just right there where the complacent smile of the manager, he's always smiling, but then he's ready to torture you because they are faced with all sorts of problems. One of the problems being that the personality who's stuck at work, they gain nothing from this whole deal. They are merely just working every day. They're not even enjoying their leisure time. So for them, they are just a slave, really. But they are a slave of their own selves, because the only thing that they know from the outside world, these severed people, they know that they have recorded a video that says, I consent to this. I consent to being stuck in this company during the day and forgetting all about my leisure time. I consent to being severed. So they're faced with this video and they're like, okay, well, I guess I have to be a slave. And they've created an inner reward structure that is ridiculous, where it's like, okay, well, if you're being a bad boy, you're going to go in the break room. And they have to punish these people and reward them with ridiculous rewards, because if they don't, they don't have willing employees, because these employees have been stripped of their liberty in a way. At least their employee conscience doesn't get to enjoy liberty. Longmont says, I really enjoyed Severance. It's a shame it only had one season. Well, haven't I seen... Sub7 was saying, I think the show Severance season 2 is done filming. I think a season 2 is coming. Yeah, it's too bad. Those very good shows, they cost a lot to produce, because the actors cost a lot. And so very often, even if they're good, they don't end up attracting enough eyes to be worth continuing. That is really too bad. But that is the state of artistry. Visual artistry is in trouble because no one pays for this crap. The whole cable TV system is sick. It's like it has become a communist money flow that's kind of passively leaking. And then there's the Netflix production system. And this one is from an Apple original. So it's one of these Apple studios. But it's super hard to maintain those because all these money flows are kind of automatic. It's like you're not really rewarded for making a good series. So it's like a good series really is only just cost for these artists. Simeon says, JF, have you made any progress on Europa, The Last Battle? Where are you at in this series? I'm still 19 minutes in. I haven't looked at it again, but I was very convinced that the 19 minutes was very strong. It's a good start. And I want to keep watching it, but I need more leisure time. And I don't consider that watching this documentary will be leisure time. I think it's work. So when I watch things like Severance, that's leisure time. That's something I enjoy. When I watch Europa Last Battle, it's when I have time and when I have work time to dedicate to this. And I've not had time. Fat Elon says, the writer's strike delayed season 2 for over a year, but it's coming. Great, great. So there's all sorts of mysteries. They don't know what they're doing. They're just looking at numbers on the screen. And the sci-fi premise is that they have tied the arbitrary numbers on the screen are tied in their brain to emotions. And so they ask, report any number that makes you angry, put it in box 1. Any number that makes you happy, put it in box 2. And they spend their days just trying to feel what the numbers are feeling, and they put it in boxes. I love the arbitrariness of the task because it's a whole transformation of an encrypted task, and it's not so far from what employees are doing at Google. I've been working for Google as a very low-level worker at Google. Like, they were hiring tens of thousands of people across the US. And when I got my green card, I was able to work for Google. And it's exactly this. It's like, okay, we're not going to show you any context, but we're going to show you this element. Would that feel like hate speech to you? Or would that feel like something that you would want to see as a result to the query, best restaurants around New York? So we were training an AI, basically, and these guys, somehow they're decoding information from an AI. That's all we know about their job. But it's very interesting. We get to see the mix of this Kafkaesque bureaucracy with the sci-fi premise, and it's all about what the workplace, like what happens when you retire. Well, when you retire, the person who's at work, who is severed, is experiencing death, basically, because it's the last second they will remember, and then they won't remember anything. So when you leave the job, when you become old enough in this corporation, you are basically given a celebration of retirement, but which is death also for you. And there's ethical questions that are arising throughout. MB says, workplace today is just kindergarten for adults. Oh yeah, the whole concept of keep them off the streets. I think we're seeing this more and more. There's a massive conflict of interest for the state to be the nanny of everything in society and to also be an employer. Because at some point you get into that dirty space of economics where, all right, you know, if I don't start employing black people en masse, I'm getting that much drugs on the street, that much murder, that much rape, and each murder and each rape will cost me that much in terms of police work. And at some point it's like, oh, well, let's keep him off the street, you know? Let's just employ 20,000 black people who we don't even care if they're going to produce something. Now you're stuck with a very dirty moral problem. You just got extorted money for something you don't need. And you're paying off that money to avoid rape, to avoid murder, to avoid trouble. Now, the population that drained that money successfully from you, you just rewarded them. If you were to abstract the system that you've created here, it's an exploitable system in which you reward murderers. So now you're paying off a population to lead acceptable lives where they have a chance to reproduce. And the only way you hired them was because you wanted to keep them off the street. You just created social welfare. You have used employment as an indirect form of social welfare, and you're farming into humanity the highest murder population you can with those selective employment methods. Now you're in trouble because the next generation, there's more people who are going off on the streets if you don't employ them. And now you're stuck with more murder. MB14 says, workplace is semi part of government now. Government steals from you. Stealing from work is okay. Yes, that is too bad. MB has sent a super chat. He says, 212,582 kilos of gold has been mined in the history. If you divide all gold with all Bitcoin, 10 kilograms of gold will be needed per Bitcoin. That will be a price of about $6,200,000 per Bitcoin. Yes, MB, yes, I love your attitude. MB has been speaking for gold and silver for so long. But yes, that is the attitude I love from you, MB. You realized it. So, Bitcoin is currently 63,000. You say that if Bitcoin was just to equate gold, I'm going to take for granted your calculation. If Bitcoin was to equate gold, we would be at $6,200,000 per Bitcoin. What is the rational thing to do when you know that the current price of Bitcoin is 100 times less than this? What is the best way you can make a 100x return on your money right now? As far as I know, Bitcoin is the only way you can do this. Because eventually, even if we were big fans of gold, suppose that society was very much built around gold, you're still going to need a virtual representation of gold. And the best virtual representation would be Bitcoin. Like, rather than actually exchange the physical gold, you would want to put all that gold into a vault and say, I'm going to start giving tickets to people that represents how much of the gold in the vault they own. And you have one ticket, I have five tickets, you have seven tickets. And eventually we would start trading these tickets and we'd be like, oh shit, I want to exchange with MB14 half a ticket. How can I split the ticket in two? And eventually you would resolve this problem with what? Bitcoin. It wouldn't be a ticket, it would be Bitcoin. And Bitcoin would be a ticket for gold. I'm glad that you got it. Now here's the thing. Gold will continue being mined and there will be people competing with your vault. They're going to make their own vault with their own ticket system. And there's going to be even more than the current amount of gold in history that you mentioned. There's eventually going to be more of it. But there will not be more Bitcoin. So These corporations that compete to create more and more gold, they're gonna have to have a value in Bitcoin ultimately, and they will be fighting for a finite amount. A complete disaster for the German government. Scholz promises probe into very serious leaked recording of plan to destroy the Crimea bridge. The German government has acknowledged that they had a plan to blow up the Crimea bridge. And it means that, you know, while Russia was building a pipeline to deliver gas to Germany, Germany's elite, military elite, were also basically at war with Russia. That is so dirty. But that we knew this from the blowing up of the pipeline, somehow, that Germany's elite, you know, given that they have not complained against it, we knew that they were in line with it. But that is an abuse of the German people. You are doing things in the name of the German people that they don't want and don't benefit from. Liars who voided Musk's excessive $56 billion pay plan seek $6 billion worth of legal fees. That is hilarious. These guys, who are not part of the productive class of humanity, they're just specialized thieves. They do their thievery with the permission of a judge. These guys are saying $56 billion pay for Elon Musk, who's part of the productive economy, who's a creator, who created something. Whether you like him or not, he's part of the productive part of the economy. They're saying $56 billion to him is so big as being illegal, but $6 billion to us would be the legal fee that we charge. They want to be paid in Tesla shares. They are vampires, DK Shadow. Yes, they are fucking parasites. And this is a big problem for Elon, because if they do get paid in Tesla shares, then they crash the market of Tesla, they cash out, Tesla goes down, and Elon's wealth goes down too with it. It's so dirty. I want to in the ideal world, we have to abolish this whole attorney system. I don't know what's the best to replace it. I do want people's rights to be respected, but we can't maintain this parasitic class in an ideal society. We have to find a solution to the attorney problem. I don't know what it is, though, because we had a good legal environment in Western civilization, and it got corrupted so quick that I'm afraid corruption always ends up being the state of the legal profession. Elon Musk was posing with untrue statement. He was saying, our policy is maximum freedom of speech within the laws of each country. I said, that's just untrue. Many American right-wingers are currently banned, like Nick Fuentes, Lucas Gage. People were reminding me of Kevin McDonald. All of this for statements covered by the First Amendment. There is a disconnect between what Elon says and what X does. I don't know what it is. Is it Elon lying? Is it Elon being lied to by his executives? Or is it Elon being naive and not wanting to see? I don't know what it is. But there's something wrong with Elon going around claiming that this is the X policy, when in fact his executives are currently adding. They've added back the whole misgendering as harassment. Elon is confused. He's there on his desk. He's not being fed the right information, or he's outright lying about it. But there's no... If you had maximal free speech within the law of the U.S., for U.S. citizens, under the First Amendment, you can say something absolutely racist, and it's protected under the First Amendment. You could just trade out, just cartoon represent Jews or whatever it is that comes to mind, as long as you're not threatening to commit an act of violence, you would be safe. But that's not the case of what I see on Twitter right now. What do we have before we conclude the show? Jeremy Kaufman was noting the Elon Musk is a woman. He's contradicting like a woman. X quietly reinstates misgendering rules a year after Musk ended policy. They added a section. Then Elon Musk came out on Twitter in response to Tim Pool, started saying, oh, it was an error. It was meant for just Brazil. It shouldn't apply to the rest of the world. But there's nothing in your TOS that says this is just for Brazil. It doesn't sound like this is real. Like, your explanation doesn't make sense. If I was an employee and I was to write a line specifically for Brazil, I would write something. I would say that, by the way, is just for Brazil. But no, I think it's applying everywhere. It's not clear. End of the line, Joel says, X has reverted to the slippery slope. Yes, and we've been through it. We've seen the progress of censorship from 2016 to 2018, and I see the same signatures. We are on the way for a Trump win. The leftists are going to get pissed. They're gonna start chipping at Elon. We have a slight progression of these little misunderstandings and, oh, sorry, we banned Stefan Molyneux. It was just an error. We have the beginning of the slippery slope of censorship. And we have an Elon in full contradiction and who apparently doesn't have full contact with his executive that are actually doing the decision. That is the exact same thing that happened with Jack Dorsey. So we have a problem here. We are headed toward the same recipe that led to the era of censorship on the internet. And Elon is falling into it like Jack Dorsey. You know, Jack Dorsey, there was kind of a hostile takeover of power from him back in the Twitter days. When you look at everything that they're preparing right now with, oh, we want to get paid in Tesla shares. So now Elon will not have Tesla shares. Now, Elon is engaged with all these loan schemes to be able to pay for X based on Tesla shares. I think they're kind of trying to take over Twitter again. They're trying to get to it by, oh, Elon got overpaid for Tesla. We have these JP Morgan and these big institutions. They have loaned money to Elon on the promise of Tesla shares for buying X. Now we have Elon leaking wealth through these justice cases where people are claiming that they have to be paid lawyer fees in Tesla shares. Something wrong is happening here. Someone has not made the proper calculation, and I'm afraid if it's Elon that's getting fucked in all this, it's also free speech on X. They may be holding him by the balls in ways that he hasn't fully understood yet. Remember how they drove him and eventually tried forcing him to buy Twitter? Because he had kind of been careless about a single line in the contract. They wanted him so hard to buy Twitter, they knew they could get at his Tesla share. They loaned him money based on the Tesla share to buy Twitter. It's going to be a line-by-line question on each of these contracts and each of these loans. What would happen in a situation where Elon is made insolvent by this attack of by a thousand knives? And wow, they are that evil. They are that interested in controlling speech. Can you realize that's how far they will go? They will set up a scheme around a rich person and they their claws are advancing onto Elon. I hope that Elon survives. John Drake says they will nationalize Twitter in the end. Then something like Nostr will replace it. I don't think they want to nationalize Twitter, because if they did so, the First Amendment would eventually rule over Twitter. And the First Amendment, you know, the big problem of the statist and leftist is that their workaround to the First Amendment, their big workaround is to leave speech to the private sector. That is their only workaround. Because if the U.S. government owned Twitter, I would go on there. I would physically locate myself at the middle of the U.S. and I would exclaim in the strongest voice possible, oh yeah, before we end the show, there was a super chat by Silver Spider. He said, hey, JF, philosophical question. When Plato proposed his theory of forms, was he actually predicting virtual reality? When Jay Dyer proposes taggies, I don't know what taggies is. Tag, is he confusing virtual reality with the spiritual? Well, I don't even know the two theories that you're mentioning. So, Plato theory of forms. And you're going to have to tell me in the regular chat, you're going to have to tell me what is the tag of Jay Dyer. I don't know what it is. The theory of form. Plato's Socrates, the theory of forms is a philosophical theory of metaphysics developed by the classical Greek philosopher Plato. The theory suggests that the physical world is not as real or true as forms. According to this theory, forms, conventionally capitalized and also commonly translated as IDs, are the non-physical, timeless, absolute, and unchangeable essences of all things, of which objects and matter in the physical world are merely imitations. Plato speaks of these entities only through the characters of his dialogues, who sometimes suggest that these forms are the only objects of study that can provide knowledge. Okay, tag is the transcendental argument for God. Okay. So the transcendental argument for God is generally if you don't recognize God, the universe isn't imbued by a truth, an objective truth, and therefore everything that you know about the world cannot be affirmed to be true, even what you believe is your true knowledge. Therefore, you need an initial truth, a kind of absolute truth of the universal truth of God that transcends into your world, your universe, so that truth can even be said of things in your universe. That is the transcendental argument in my most Thielman version of it. It's an argument by necessity, so it's like Think Vegas says it is fate. It's like you with this you could justify purple ponies too. That's the problem. Purple ponies are populating purple pony land. Okay, that's a truth. That's true. I can verify it's truth. Of course, it wouldn't have been called purple pony land if it didn't have purple ponies in it. So here's a truth that can transcend, that can give me a reference to something that is true. This truth, I will then affirm that purple ponies are transcendental and that their truth gets out of this self-referential loop and shines over the, all truths of the universe. That is what the transcendentalists are doing with God. They are somehow claiming, oh yeah, not only do I have this God truth, which is self-referential, but also the property of this God is that it is transcendental. It shines truth over the whole universe. Okay, well, I can say the same of purple ponies. So ultimately, what's the difference between God and purple ponies? They are both isolatable in a circular self-referential truth. And we can both attribute them the transcendentality that they attribute to God. So basically, you can make up any parallel universe and any justification for anything with this pattern. Now, your question is, when Plato proposed this theory of forms, was he actually predicting virtual reality? No. Plato was experiencing with ideas that that we would today perhaps fall under mathematical realism. This whole idea that since everything in the world can be represented as mathematics, ultimately there is a mathematical equation for how you experience redness. First, there is the frequency of the light that is red, which is a mathematical object in and of itself. But even the computations that happen in your brain to make you feel that redness and the way you feel it, even that is can be abstracted as a mathematical equation. And so that is the idea that the universe is mathematics. And you may perceive it as, oh, well, you feel like it's a 3D space, but it's not always perfectly 3D. Ultimately, it always boils down to the math. And mathematical realism is simply this belief or feeling or affinity with a view of the universe as being all mathematics in action. I believe that the Plato forms is kind of there. It's kind of trying to attribute prior value to the abstract representation of things rather than the expression of these things. And I wouldn't say that I think that this is a philosophical perspective. I don't think it is true. I think it's an angle that you can adopt on reality. You can say, oh, well, you know, the remote control that I have here, is it really important? Is it? There's almost nothing in the object itself that truly matters. It's a bunch of atoms, some plastic, some metal. But the fact that it's a remote control gives me so much more information. Like if I told you, without showing you the remote control, if I told you I have a bunch of plastic atoms here with a bunch of metal atoms that are aligned in certain ways, you wouldn't necessarily have guessed that I had a remote control. But if I tell you I have a remote control, you suddenly know so much about it. So the idea seems truer than the instantiation. And that is a feeling. And that is the feeling that Plato was communicating there. That there is an essence that is more important in the idea than in its instantiation. The same thing happens with the theory of evolution. You have a bunch of monkeys, they're eating bananas. But the theory of evolution gives you access to so much above what actually exists. And in fact, the theory of evolution invokes potential alternative monkeys that may have never existed in the universe. But you can ask, why aren't monkeys nine-legged? Why didn't monkeys evolve nine legs? And the theory of evolution kind of gives you answers about this. There may be answers in the postural realities of monkeys and the fact that perhaps four legs is just what you need, but not more. You can make all sorts of arguments about aerodynamism, cost of energy, impracticality of having nine legs, optimality, blah, blah, blah. You can engineer the whole question. But the fact is, there's never been a monkey with nine legs anyway. But the theory of evolution kind of gives you this meta-knowledge above the existing universe that kind of tells you the universe is just the instantiation of this greater process. Now, all of these things, they are all what we would call metaphysics. They take you from the observation and they build a world above it. But I'm a reductionist. I'm truly a reductionist because I've never been convinced. Although I am an enjoyer of theory, I live in my mind. I would love to fully subscribe to this metaphysics understanding of the world. But I'm always brought down to the instantiation of reality. I can't give it up. That's why even among thinkers, I'm an ultra artist. I don't know that we need metaphysics. I don't know that metaphysics is a thing. I don't know that there is a truth about the theory of forms of Plato. I don't know that mathematical realism can be affirmed to be true. You see? Because I think that having an understanding is what your mind does. It's how you construct an agentic understanding of the world, but the world doesn't have to be that way. The world that we are presented with is an instance. And to me, it all boils down to the instance, so much so, I'm such a radical of this belief that even my favorite theory of science, which is the theory of evolution, I'm not even sure it's needed. Because I'm like, well, the nine-legged monkey never existed. So does it really matter that four-legged monkeys outcompete nine-legged monkeys? The only thing that truly matters is that there was a monkey, there was a snake, and one of the monkeys had a little ray of light that came into his DNA, changed his mutation, change a letter of DNA from one to another, made this monkey better at escaping snakes, not better than a nine-legged monkey, better than the other monkey that also had four legs but didn't have this mutation. And the snake ended up eating that monkey, but not that monkey. And those are the real instantiated forms of the theory of evolution. Those are the real natural selection pressure that actually happened in the universe. And they are very rare. Many times we invoke fictitious forms in natural selection scenarios. And ultimately, because the laws of physics are not violated by life forms, you have to acknowledge that there is a whole history of the life that exists on Earth that could be told without the theory of evolution. That is, I could, rather than think of, well, these monkeys were better than these other monkeys, I could really, like, sever my brain. Severance. Cut my brain from the belief in evolution. Well, ultimately, these monkeys were kicked by a ray of light away from the snake, where they made babies. Ultimately, these bacteria were kicked by a ray of light to process the Krebs cycle in that way rather than that way. And all of this led them to make babies. You can have a theory of evolution that doesn't rely on fictitious form. it's probably so complicated that it couldn't be approached by the human brain in a practical sense, which is why the theory of evolution sounds so much more true to the human brain. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it adds to the physical story. In the end, the physics must fit with the biology, and therefore, in the end, the instantiation must fit with the ID. But I'm not sure that the ID is the truth. The instantiation, maybe. Much love. See you all tomorrow.